Welcome to Mom Talk Radio, the show that tackles topics important to you and your family, finances, food, education, technology, and everything in between. We've got it covered on Mom Talk. And now, here's Mary Donnellan on Mom Talk Radio.
Welcome to Mom Talk Radio. As our lovely intro voice said, this is Mary in for Maria, and it is a pleasure to be here this week. It is September, bumping toward the end of September, and this Thursday, September 22nd, we welcome the official start of fall, or as the geeky people like to say, the autumnal equinox. Did I say that right? Equinox? I think I said that right. Autumnal equinox. And it is basically the signal of fall. And for moms, families, and their kids, it means, oh, I just love the fall. It means fall decorations getting pulled out of the attic or the basement, pumpkins decorating the front porch, and Halloween right around the corner. And my 9-year-old has already picked out her Halloween costume, and we still have a full month to go. So she's already looking at costumes, and it's just a really exciting time of year. And of course, we have a fall. And actually, in my neighborhood, we have a fall festival, which we do. It's like a block party. So it's a really fun time. And again, we're in Florida. We don't get a huge spike in temperatures, obviously. Excuse me, not a spike, a decline. We don't get a huge drop in temperatures, and we don't get the layer or anything. But it's still, it cools off down in Florida, and we still have a nice, decorations out and everything. So it's all about the fall decorations. And of course, that is the kickoff of the holidays, which will be right around the corner. And if you've noticed, actually, I was in CVS the other day, and there's Halloween candy and Halloween decorations had been out since, probably the beginning of August, some middle of August. So, those stores are trying to capitalize on it. I think the number is for Halloween candy, I think the number is in the multi-million dollars in just bags of candy alone. So it's obviously become a huge holiday. So I think the sooner the stores get that candy bag on the shelf, the better off they are. So, and with that said, I wish you all a happy autumn. And we have a great show lined up, actually. And up north, most schools went back to school right after Labor Day. So you're probably just edging into the second week of school, maybe the third. And we've got a show that's actually featuring a lot of back to school topics, focusing on kids getting settled in. And we'll talk to Dr. Frank Lopez. He'll give us back to school tips for kids with ADHD. And that, as we know, affects millions of grades. School and high school kids across the country, and there's some important tips he's going to give us. Our spotlight on moms, Gwendolyn, she's going to actually share tips on mental health, moms with mental health and taking care of mental health issues and taking care of yourself so you can take care of your family. So that's going to be an interesting topic. Dr. Ali Domar is the author of Finding Calm for the Expectant Mom. So we're going to go back to when you were pregnant and offer information on emotion during pregnancy, from the stress to the joy and everything in between, maybe how to recognize whether your heightened emotions during pregnancy, which we all know we have them, is that normal? Is it depression? Is it something that is a red flag? So that's going to be a great segment. And we're talking to psychologist Dr. Joe Dilley, who'll cover the balance of online schoolwork and screen time. I know my kids, actually two of my two older children have iPads, and all they do is their work online. So there's protections, there's firewalls in place, but are they getting out and doing other things, on their iPads, school iPads, that they shouldn't be doing? And as well, obviously, they have phones. So Dr. Dilley will talk about how we balance online schoolwork and screen time. And then actually, for the last segment, we're going to switch gears and talk food, specifically the most important meal of the day. We'll be talking to the author of Rise and Shine, Better Breakfasts for Busy Mornings. And as we all know, school time, even though it's a nice schedule that kicks in, is still very busy, and getting breakfast in is very important. So we have a great show lined up. We'll be right back after this short break with Dr. Frank Lopez, and he'll be talking about back to school tips for kids with ADHD. Stay with us.
Mom's Little Secret, Mom Talk Radio.
This is Mary in for Maria, and as I mentioned earlier, this is all about back to school and getting our kids ready and giving them tips and strategies to handle everything. And kicking off that segment, and topic is Dr. Frank Lopez. He is a neurodevelopmental pediatrician and director of the Children's Development Center in Winter Park, Florida. So he's right up the street from us, and he is in private practice. Welcome to Mom Talk Radio, Dr. Lopez.
Well, thank you very much for having me. It's my pleasure.
So there's how many children are affected with ADHD on a national average, let's say?
Well, that's a significant number. ADHD is the most treatable condition that is diagnosed in pediatric centers, and approximately 6 million children, or 11% throughout the U.S., are actually afflicted by this condition.
Right. And what do you say if someone says, is it really a disorder, or is it just an overdiagnosed kid who can't sit still?
No, this is a true disorder. It's been studied up one side and down the other. There is plenty of evidence, lots of research that is ongoing on a daily basis, well-proven disorder. And in fact, it's probably underdiagnosed.
Yes. So that's interesting. So you said 6 million?
That's correct.
So with all, that's a lot of kids going back to school. And what tips do parents need to know to help their child with ADHD navigate particularly the transition into a new school year?
Well, first and foremost, this is not a one-size-fits-all condition. This is, you really want to sit down with your pediatrician at a checkup and just, discuss what concerns you may have in terms of the child's attention, what the teacher may have brought up to you, what you see in everyday life. And, since every child experiences symptoms in a different degree, it's important to really, really, ask the questions and get a thorough explanation as to how the condition might impact your child.
Is there specific questions you should ask? Like, in other words, well, let me back up a step. So you're assuming this child's already been diagnosed with ADHD, and there's got to be a dialogue with the teachers, correct? Or his or her teacher.
Correct. There should be something. But even though, the American Academy of Pediatrics actually points out that if you have a child as young as 5 years of age who has exceptional levels of activity or does not seem to be paying attention to you when you're talking to them, you really need to explore that. And that's a great opportunity for a parent to reach out to their pediatrician or the family physician and get questions answered. And if they need further assistance, then they can be directed to either a behavioral therapist or a developmental pediatrician, neurologist, or psychiatrist.
Right. So then what should parents ask their doctor about their child's ADHD then?
So number one is, first of all, do you consider my child's presentation as being inattentive or hyperactive or impulsive or having all three of these things? And the parents usually will ask because the child is acting without thinking, is in constant motion, the Energizer Bunny revisited. So those kind of experiences at home and also at school and even in social settings will lead to concerns. And those are the kind of things that you want to ask your doc. Do you think that my child's level of activity is beyond what is expected for his age or her age for that matter?
Switching back then to the school, assuming you've gone through the process with the doctors, a pediatrician, that's a behavioral specialist, where does the teacher come in? Who's involved at the school level?
So at the school level, you want to get as much information as possible. So when you go back to your physician, say the teacher has seen these behaviors, there are forms that can be used to request information that your teachers may have available that your doctor can prescribe. And then when you go back to see your doctor, you want to talk to them about any new treatments that may be supportive and, guide this, get some guidance. There's lots of research going on all the time. There are new products that are being introduced for the treatment of ADHD. So as there are different treatments you don't really know about, this is a good opportunity when you get school information coming in, your information given to the physician, and then you go for the next step, which is really asking, what can we do for my child who is, presenting all of these difficulties.
Right. And of course, in most schools anyway, they do have resources as well that parents can utilize for their child. Correct?
Well, yeah, I agree. But if the child is that significantly impaired, you really need to talk to your doctor to find out what treatments are available. Just as an example, I've been working with a company recently, Neos Pharmaceutical, and they've introduced a new treatment that was approved by the FDA called Adzenys orally disintegrating tablets. And this is a new and easier version of medication for children 6 and older to take. And, you know, this is a tablet that actually, you know, disintegrates in the mouth and is swallowed. And then you have the onset of, you know, treatment for this disorder. So this is one of many treatments, but it's one of the latest ones, and it's very exciting.
Oh, so you're saying that this is basically, obviously, the pediatrician's office or the behavioral specialist, then you talk about treatment options and medication?
That is correct.
What was the name of it? I missed it.
Adzenys.
Oh, okay.
ODT, which stands for Adzenys Extra. You know, it's a long-acting, and it's an orally disintegrating tablet.
Right. So what else is going on in that in the field then? You're saying there's new... obviously, the more studies that go on and everything else, there's more, specialized medications therapies. And what else is going on?
Well, you know, science and medicine are always working together and moving forward. So we don't just rely on medication alone. Medication is a great part of it. And this is where that Adzenys XR-ODT, orally disintegrating tablet, comes in. But, you know, children need to have support in terms of behavior therapy, academic supports if they have learning variations or disabilities, and medication in conjunction with those are the steps that parents need to consider in, you know, progressing with treatment.
Right. So it's a continuum of care, rather, that it's not just one specific thing. So
absolutely correct. Yeah.
Absolutely. So can you give our listeners a couple of websites they can go to for information and resources?
So absolutely. So there's, of course, there is the CHAD group, which is the Child and Adult with Attention Deficit Disorder, and that's CHADD.org. And you also have, you know, the Adzenys website, which you can go to, as well as the CDC, where you can get individual data, not only about ADHD, but also about different, you know, the differences in states in terms of the frequency of a diagnosis in a particular area.
Okay, great. Thank you so much, Dr. Lopez, for joining us, and we'll have those links up on Mom Talk Radio next week. And we'll take a short break, and when we come back, we'll shine a spotlight on moms, and we'll be talking to Gwendolyn Mulholland. We'll be right back. It's my favorite segment of Mom Talk Radio. We talk to moms, everyday moms that are living the life and blogging and tweeting. And this is Gwendolyn Mulholland. She is the mom of two children, a tween and a teen, it looks like. And she blogs at FindingSanityInOurCrazyLife.com and tweets at FindingSanity1. And that's the numeral one. Welcome to Mom Talk Radio, Gwendolyn.
Hi, thank you for having me.
So... you want to talk about a really important topic, and it's something that we sometimes just don't want to talk about, and that is parenting and mental health. So it's obviously there's a lot going on with kids, and especially back to school time, and the holidays are crazy. But tell us a little bit about your experiences, and you have some tips to share as well, correct?
Yes, I do. I mean, parenting itself is hard to tackle on, you know, a day-to-day basis. And then when you add in having a mental illness, you know, and trying to balance your mental health and still being a parent, things can get a little complicated, especially at this time of year when all of a sudden routines are being put back in place, the joys of summer are gone. You know, it's kind of nice to have the downtime in the summer, but schedule is good at times.
Yes.
And the one really big thing that if no one does anything else is to take time for yourself. And this is something that moms and dads, you know, need to do anyways. You know, you have to take care of you in order to be able to take care of your family. And as someone who has bipolar disorder, it's hard to take time for yourself because you feel like you're cutting your family out, you know, that you're taking away from them. But the one thing over the years I have learned is I'm only as good for them as I am for me.
That's true.
I always, you know, whenever anyone asks, I tell them, you know, you do need to put yourself first at times because you can't help them, you know, if you're worn out, if you're worn down. And, you know, it's something little as much as, you know, sometimes I even like to just go grocery shopping by myself. You know, I like grocery shopping, so that, you know, that's a stress reliever. It could be going to sit at the park, going out with your girlfriend, saying, I'm going to read a book for 30 minutes, go away. And that's okay. And we shouldn't feel guilty about that. And when we do that, you know, it kind of goes into the next thing I feel that's important is setting boundaries. You know, if you say this is what I'm going to do, you know, I need this time for myself, is to set those boundaries up and stick with them. It's okay to tell your kid, you know, your children, okay, you need to go see your dad during this time that's, you know, for me. Or telling your spouse, no, I need this time, because it helps you overall, which once again goes back to helping the family. And with the kids back in school, we tend to feel like we're shorter on time. You know, they've got after-school activities and, you know, different school events. But it is still really important, you know, to set those boundaries. And even when it comes to their school activities, you know, and school events, I mean, the schools are always sending home notes, you know, oh, we need volunteers for this, and, you know, we need volunteers for that. And I homeschool, so I personally don't have as much of that now as when the kids were in school. But it's still important to have those boundaries and say, this is what I'm going to do, and stick with them and not feel guilty about it. Because I think, yeah, as moms, we tend to make ourselves feel guilty.
I think a lot of moms do exactly feel that. They feel guilty, and they can't, you know, because they're obviously have to give 100%, 110% to their family. And you're right. It doesn't help anybody if the mom's, her tank's half full. You know, if your tank's half full, it's not going to help. The best analogy, and I have 2 points to make really quickly, because the best analogy I had was from one of my babysitters when my kids were really young, and she used to be a flight attendant. And she used the analogy of when you get the safety emergency procedure talk at the beginning of each flight, and they say, when the oxygen mask drops, put it on yourself first, then assist your child. And that was her way, right, of saying that's exactly how you should look at your whole, you know, everything you do. In other words, start with yourself, and then everybody else will be just fine, you know. So it's very interesting.
Yeah, and it is amazing how once you set, you know, especially the boundaries and taking time for yourself, once you start doing that, the family falls in line. You know, the kids start to see, your husband starts to see, oh, wow, yeah, she is, you know, a little nicer person and not as stressed when, you know, she's had time to herself, or, you know. And you, right, actually end up being able to give more, you know, by taking more time for yourself.
Right.
Because you don't feel burnt out.
Right.
Know? And the analogy with the oxygen mask is totally spot on.
Do we find information about this on your blog? Your blog is findingsanityinourcrazylife.com.
Yep. And on the blog, I will actually have a link with those tips and three more that I find, you know, really helpful just to help, you know, with the parenting. They will be on the website. It'll actually go live today, so they will be able to access that information. And, you know, there's other helpful tips about parenting and, you know, things just to make life easier.
Wonderful. Thank you so much, Gwendolyn, and best of luck in the school year and that you're homeschooling. You're very brave. I always wanted to, but I never had the courage to do it. So good for you. And have a wonderful fall and holiday. And when we come back, we're joined by Dr. Ali Domar. She is the author of Finding Calm for the Expectant Mom. Stay with us.
Helping you succeed at the most important career you'll ever have. Welcome to Mom Talk with Maria Bailey.
This is Marion for Maria, and we're continuing our discussion about moms and our happiness and stress-free lives. And we're actually going to talk about expectant moms with Dr. Ali Domar. So it was Alice, but it's Ali Domar. She's the author of Finding Calm for the Expectant Mom and is a founder and executive director of the Domar Centers for Mind-Body Health. And she's a busy mom herself. She is driving right now to get her daughter, and she is in on the Mass Pike driving to the Berkshires. So welcome to Mop Talk Radio, Dr. Domar.
Thank you so much. This is a classic mom, you know, doing two things simultaneously.
Yeah, so as our producer said, let's stay safe. You're on your Bluetooth on your phone, and that's good. We love it. We're glad you can find the time to talk to us. So let's talk about it. So your book, you're the author of the book Finding Calm for the Expectant Mom, and it's all about what? Tell us.
Well, you know, people always ask me why I wrote this book, and I say there are two reasons. One is that I think there's a societal pressure for pregnant women to glow, to be radiant, to be happy, to be serene. And, you know, I'm a psychologist, and I see pregnant patients pretty much every day. And for a lot, you know, yes, there's certainly some women who love every second of their pregnancy, and I never see those women. But there are a lot of women out there who find it hard to be pregnant. You know, you can have physical symptoms, you can have psychological symptoms, and people often don't feel okay complaining about it. And so one of the reasons I wrote the book was to say, you know what, a lot of these things that you're feeling, the uncomfortableness, the depression, the anxiety, it's really normal, and here are ways to feel better while you're pregnant. I was writing a blog the other day about irritability, and I was listing all the reasons why pregnant women can feel irritable, and you know what, there are a lot of them. You know, you get hungry, but you don't know that you're hungry because you're nauseous, and you're really tired because you're not sleeping well at night. And, you know, you and your partner may be responding to this pregnancy in different ways. And weird people come up and touch you. I just saw a patient today. she's sick and tired of perfect strangers coming up, putting their hands on her belly.
The belly touch, yep. It's very random, isn't it?
So intrusive.
Yes.
You know, and then, you know, your in-laws might say you have to name the baby Pen. Or you just don't feel like you're most attractive. Or, I mean, there are lots of reasons why you should be irritable while you're pregnant. And I consider that normal. But, you know, if you're the average woman who goes into social media and all people talk about is how great they feel, it makes the average pregnant woman feel like she's not doing a good job being pregnant, or maybe she shouldn't be having a baby. And, like, no, this is hard. It's hard work to build a baby.
Your book basically sounds like the realistic guide to pregnancy, the up, the hot, the good, and the not so good. I don't want to say bad, because actually only amongst my girlfriends, like my really close girlfriends, would we ever say, oh my God, pregnancy sucked, you know, or parts of it did, not all of it, but there were parts where you just were like, that was not fun.
Well, you know, I was talking to a colleague of mine a couple of years ago, and I was telling her about writing this book, and she said that a strange thing happened when she got pregnant with her second baby. She was talking to a colleague of hers who had, two perfect pregnancies. And when the perfect colleague asked my colleague, you know, how are you doing? And my colleague said, well, you know, I'm really nauseous. I'm having a hard time sleeping. I'm having leg cramps. And the perfect colleague says, oh, yeah, that's right. I forget you hate being pregnant. And my colleague is like, no, that's not it.
No, I don't. Yeah.
No, I love the fact that I'm, you know, bringing my children into the world. It's just, I'm talking honestly about how uncomfortable it can be to be pregnant. And people misinterpret that. So it's okay to be uncomfortable. It's okay to complain about it. And so, yes, the book is about acknowledging that and trying to fix the things you can fix so you can feel better.
If you're struggling with pregnancy emotions, where does the red flag come in that it's probably something a little bit more?
You know, I'm getting really sick and tired of this huge battle that's being sort of fought in the obstetrical and psychiatry world as to whether or not a woman who's pregnant should be taking antidepressant medication. And everyone talks about either yes, she should, or no, she shouldn't. And no one ever talks about what the alternatives are. There are other things that can treat depression other than medication. And so clearly, if a woman is severely depressed, if she's suicidal, if she's having suicidal thoughts, if she can't get out of bed, if she's, you know, if she's hurting herself because of her depression, then of course she should be on medication. There's no question. But for the 90% of pregnant women who are taking medication or have a history of depression, maybe it's a better idea to try other things first, and specifically cognitive behavior therapy, which has been shown over and over again to be as effective as medication in treating mild to moderate depression.
So other than medication, there are options and women should explore.
Absolutely. You know, I'm not saying don't take medication, but I'm saying maybe try something else first, and if it doesn't work, then try medication.
Right. And the website is Dr. Alice, A-L-I-C-E, Domar, domar.com. And we'll have that link up on Mom Talk Radio next week. And when we come back, we're joined by Dr. Joe Dilley. He is a licensed clinical psychologist, and he'll be talking about kids and healthy screen time, school time, etc. Lots to talk about. We'll be right back.
The number one podcast for busy moms, Mom Talk Radio.
We're going to talk to a psychologist, Dr. Joe Dilley, licensed clinical psychologist, I should say. He provides psychotherapy and psychological assessment to individuals of any age, couples, and families. Welcome to Mom Talk Radio, Dr. Dilley.
Hi, Mary. Thanks so much.
So we talked about this as being, big back to school season. And when I introed the show, you didn't hear it, but I talked about how kids are always on screens. And now I have two high schoolers that are on iPads for school. So talk a little bit about how the increasing online work can bleed over into personal time.
Sure. Yeah. It's a really difficult balance that we have to strike now in families where we're trying to figure out how to make sure that our kids have access to all the research and homework assignments that they need to access, and then how they also have access then to, email and Google Docs and ways of submitting the completed project online oftentimes. But having to balance all that with the fact that, well, it doesn't mean we can be on the screen all afternoon. We still have to exercise. We've still got to do extracurriculars. And my goodness, we need to keep talking to each other and have dinner together and, have a little time for recreation that's not tech-based. So it's a real challenge, but fortunately, we're finding some ways of figuring out how to do that.
And how is that?
Yes. Well, okay. So there are a number of different approaches. The main one, given this issue of how much work is now online, is to have really excellent communication between parent and teacher, and then between parent and student. So here's what I have in mind and what I have families do with great success. The parent kind of initially serves as facilitator and sort of shuttle diplomat, where what we're figuring out is, okay, so my son or daughter needs to access the following online material. But can that be done in any other way, and can it be submitted back in any other way? For example, is there some latitude in what's being assigned? So my son tells me, I can't not sign on to do my homework. I need all the research that's online. But would your teacher allow us to go together to the library and do this in an old school fashion? How about when you're, needing to typewrite an assignment, can we use this old laptop that doesn't connect to the internet so that it can still be typed, but about the only thing that works on it is, Microsoft Word. But, hey, that'll allow us to word process your document. So kind of figuring out what the teacher's expectations are, what the student's expectations are, and finding ways of, when necessary, establishing a new way of completing what's required that won't necessarily lead down some of those same rabbit holes into, inappropriate internet context or overuse of the internet. And then Junior can still get his grade, and the teacher can still be satisfied. And then once it's all complete, then it's fine to go back to the iPad or the computer with full access and, resume some more gameplay and other appropriate internet use.
So I had two high schoolers, and there's lots of apps that the kids use that they basically is an intranet, more or less, where they just directly send their homework digitally to the teacher. But here's what happens. My daughter has her phone next to her. She'll be sitting there doing the work on her iPad, and then she'll be FaceTiming with a friend. So what do I do about that?
We really do have to make these appeals appealing for our kids. It's not that we're not going to. We're positioning it in a different way where instead of the child getting played, as it were, we're figuring out how to make sure that the child or teen is in control and doing the playing. So when it comes to something like a phone, so let's say you've established with your daughter that she's going to use grandpa's old school typewriter. And I know this sounds ridiculous, but there's actually this hipster movement right now that says, hey, how about writing that's just writing? No apps, no distractions, dust off the old typewriter from the attic, from mom and dad's attic, and I'm just going to hammer out like some cool poetry or whatever, my jam is. So let's say we've gotten that far. Oh, but the phone is right next to us. Okay.
Right.
So then it comes down to, as you said, a question more of time management. And so what we have to figure out is your daughter satisfied with the length of time that it takes her to complete the work? And are you satisfied, and is the teacher satisfied with the product, the final product? Because if she says, if your daughter says, yeah, you know, I don't mind toggling between the two, and you're saying, well, you do get it done and you still do get enough sleep, and the teacher says, yeah, and it's high quality work, well, then we have a much different scenario than if the answer to all those things is kind of no, or it's in the negative, because that scenario would be just like a study group of kids right. at a library.
Right.
But let's say that the answer is no to some of those things. You know, no, Mom, I really wish I could get my homework done faster, and I don't really want to turn off my FaceTime, but, yeah, this is, you know, making my assignments essentially drag on. Or let's say right. the teacher says, yeah, and, you know, she's not putting forth her best work. Well, then we have to do this just like we would if we were going to teach your daughter tennis or something like that, where we're going back to the three primary ways that any of us, especially kids and teens, learn anything, and that is what we're shown or what's modeled for us, what we're told or how we're instructed, and then third and perhaps most relevant to this discussion is the outcomes of what we choose. So right now, the outcome of turning off that phone and getting to work is really unpleasant compared to keeping the phone on and kind of making the work more tolerable. So that's where we have to get a little bit creative with our children and teens together, come up with some ways of making the outcome of turning off the phone actually work out better than keeping it on. And sometimes that involves delaying gratification and having it work out better in the long run. An example might be, oh, so you mean if I get this done and my teacher says it's up to snuff, and because I will get it done with time to spare, then you and I get to go out and, you know, whatever this thing is that I've
whatever the reward is, right.
Yeah, and when we say that word reward, it's easy to hear bribe. However, we're not bribing for two very important reasons. Number one is not giving the reward in advance of the work. We are offering a realistic and appropriate positive outcome after the task is completed or after the desired behavior is demonstrated. So that's the fundamental difference. And then second, but equally importantly, I would say, is that we're not encouraging our children to do something that's unethical, illegal, or immoral. And those are usually characteristic of bribery. Instead, right. we're setting up a paradigm that she's going to face in the adult world when it comes time to apply for, you know, a home loan or a job or a car loan, where the bank is going to say, hey, let's see your credentials, and she'll either have them or she won't.
Right. So, Dr. Dilley, where can our listeners find information about what you're talking about? You have a website, correct?
Don'tgetplayed.com. And there's a lot of info on there, and obviously a lot of info about the book. This is a just an incredibly important issue.
As you said, relevant and complex in many ways. So thank you so much for joining us, Dr. Dilley. And again, it's don'tgetplayed.com. Thank you. And when we come back, we're going to wrap the show after we talk to Katie Sullivan Morford. She is the author of Rise and Shine, Better Breakfasts for Busy Mornings. It's the foodie segment of Mom Talk Radio. This is Mary, and for Maria, I'm pleased to welcome Katie Sullivan Morford. She is the author of a new book just released last month called Rise and Shine, Better Breakfast for Busy Mornings. She's a freelance food and nutrition writer and has a fantastic resume of articles that have appeared in major cooking and online publications. So welcome to Mom Talk Radio, Katie.
Thank you. It's wonderful to be here.
Thank you. So we're talking about breakfast. It's obviously the most important meal of the day. We know this, but we're busy. Back to school, especially, we're just trying to get in the routine. And even, I mean, I'm not a good breakfast eater, so I think I need to work harder for my kids to make a healthy breakfast. Can you give us a little bit of a few tips on the making a good healthy breakfast?
Well, I mean, my whole premise of my book is exactly that. It's really those 260 weekday breakfasts a year that so many of us, you know, parents and non-parents, struggle to get on the table. And I really kind of took approach of solutions. So everything from really, really quick and easy things like smoothies that you can bang out in a couple of minutes to simple toast that are, you know, nutritious and delicious, breakfast sandwiches, and a lot of make-ahead things that you can say when you have a Sunday and you have an hour and you and your child can get together and do a beautiful loaf of whole grain banana bread or some freezer-friendly breakfast burritos and stow those in the freezer and you can have them all week long. So there's lots and lots of solutions that are, you know, more interesting, delicious, and nourishing than either skipping, of course, or pouring a box of cereal.
Actually, that was, you answered two of my questions because I was thinking, I hope you have make-ahead stuff in this book, because this cookbook, because a lot of moms, you know, even Maria has always said, like, if you can cook batches of food on Sunday and then during the week you're not scrambling to just, like you said, throw a bowl of cereal on the table.
Yeah, and I mean, even I also have a lot of ideas of things that you can do the night before, so that, for example, when I'm cooking dinner, you know, at the same time I might be throwing together, you know, ingredients for a quick parfait in the morning, or I have even some things like, you know, a simple pancake batter that you can make the night before, or a waffle batter, and then just turn your waffle iron, throw the batter in there while you're making your coffee. Something that we more typically think of as a weekend thing with a little bit of advanced prep you can do during the week.
In the book, then, is it also kid-friendly recipes? Did you mention that earlier?
Yeah, I mean, the whole book is for families and parents. There's lots of things. I have three children myself. They tested and tasted and gave critique on every single recipe in the book.
That's cool.
And I also talk a lot about ways that, you know, kids can get involved in making their own breakfast. I mean, I think that's a great gateway meal to get them learning some confidence in the kitchen. And I have a lot of fun things in here. I have, for little ones, I have something I call teddy bear toast that is just, you know, peanut butter and bananas, but you sort of craft it in a really simple way to look like a teddy bear. I have
cute.
A breakfast yogurt popsicle. You know, that's especially for the kind of grumpy morning person who doesn't want to get out of bed a minute earlier. You can make this nourishing, it's made with Greek yogurt and chia seeds and raspberries, and, you know, put one of these in their hand and, you know, send them out the door of the bus.
That's wonderful. Yeah, I like that those yogurt pops sound great. And I actually have, you know, just one of my three is the grumpy morning. It doesn't even like breakfast, really. Like, physiologically, she just doesn't really, she's always just the very picky, almost a non-breakfast eater. How do I approach that?
Yeah, I think I actually have a section in the book called Breakfast Battles Made Better. And I sort of, you know, sort of break down all what I call the breakfast personalities. And certainly one of them is, you know, someone who says, I just don't have an appetite for breakfast. And
exactly.
I think, you know, we all are different. You know, one of my girls happens to be like a champion breakfast eater, and my middle one, not so much. So it's sort of like figuring out what works for each child. One of the things I say is just have your child at least sit at the table for a couple of minutes, because sometimes if they take the time and they're sitting there and there's something simple and nourishing sitting in front of them, they may find they have an appetite after all. And also, you know, a lot of times with my little one, it's packing something up that she can take to go, because even, you know, 30 minutes after she leaves the house, that's when the appetite might kick in, and then she has, you know, a whole grain muffin in her backpack, or a, you know, the book has some breakfast bars, and can pull that out with a container of milk and actually have something, you know, good for her.
Right. All right. Where can we find the book, Rise and Shine, Better Breakfast for Busy Mornings? Where can we find it? And give us your website.
MomsKitchenHandbook.com. And there's links on my site to buy the book. And, of course, you can get it in local bookstores and on Amazon.
Wonderful. Congratulations. I'm definitely going to buy it, because I definitely need help in the kitchen.
Oh, good.
And
well, thank you so much. It's been wonderful talking to you.
Thank you so much for joining us on this episode of Mom Talk Radio. That wraps our show for today. Maria will be back behind the mic next week. And in the meantime, have a wonderful week.